welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. I'm Phil Holdsworth, your host and founder of Aurum Gold. We specialize in helping companies improve the financial well-being of their employees. This is where we talk about all things money and well-being. And my guest today, Vicky Richardson, is a nutritionist. Vicky, welcome to Wisdom Chat.
Hi, Phil. It's lovely to be here.
And I'm really looking forward to our conversation because I know we've just been sort of having a chat beforehand and it's been really exciting. We've had to stop ourselves because we were going to miss the recording, so to speak. But just to say, in terms of your role, you run a company called Core Nutritional Therapy. And you deal with, well, to be honest, as we've been talking, it's more than nutrition, though. But tell us something about the work that you do, Vicky.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. With pleasure, I'll do that. So my company is Core Nutritional Therapy. So I run a one-to-one nutritional therapy clinic with a specific focus on gut health. And I also love to do corporate talks and workshops. And I also run interactive mindful dinner events. But just to give you a little bit of story behind the background behind what I'm doing, my journey with this began with my own gut health issues, which the NHS was very, you know, brilliant at checking out for me. And it was found that I didn't have any sinister underlying conditions. But I was left with just kind of go away and manage it yourself kind of advice. So I began my own health quest, really, to try and get to the bottom of how I could improve, because it was affecting my quality of life. So that's what led me to nutrition therapy, realizing that nutritional changes could have a really big impact on what I was experiencing. And I don't actually have IBD, but in the course of that research, I noticed that it was a lot around mindfulness-based interventions and IBD, and that being a very successful intervention. Yeah. IBD is inflammatory bowel disease, just to clarify.
Thank you. I was just going to ask you IBD, but thank you very much, Vicky. Yeah, sorry.
So on that spectrum, it's thought that there's a range of thinking that IBD, IBS, ulcerative colitis, all those sort of gut issues are, although they are distinct in their symptoms, they're on a kind of spectrum. And I am somewhere on that spectrum. I don't actually have either of those diagnoses, but I had some unpleasant symptoms that were affecting my quality of life. So I became really fascinated about this mindfulness aspect, because I was like, well, that's in your mind, it's not in your body. How can that affect something that's physically a very real, unpleasant physical symptoms? And there began my sort of absolute fascination and such excitement when I started reading the research about how your mind state is intimately linked with all of your health, but especially your gut health.
I find, I was looking forward to chatting with you because you used the term earlier about holistic, and oftentimes we will talk about things in society in isolation to one another as though there isn't a connection. And yet, actually, as human beings, there is so much connection between both the mind and the body. So I love what you're saying about the mindfulness side. And what you have discovered in relation to the effects of poor nutrition would have on us. And we say, even in the finance world, we talk about the practicalities of managing your money, the practicalities of investment, savings, protection, all sorts of things, from sort of the stock markets to mortgages and things like this. And yet the biggest influencer on all of those areas is you and me.
Yeah.
It's our minds. It's the way we view the world, the way we think about things. And yet it also has a profound impact on ourselves from our physical well-being to our emotional, our psychological well-being. So, Vicky, tell us a little bit about the mindfulness side and what you discovered. We were talking about Dr. Candice Pert, who wrote the book Molecules of Emotions earlier, weren't we? And what that actually meant in terms of the effects on the human body and its implications to live a resilient life. Tell us a little bit more about that sort of thought process and
mindfulness. Yeah, well, I mean, she talked about, you mentioned about how she discovered the receptors and the importance of those, the receptors of the stress hormones. And one of the things that happens when we're in a stressed state is there's a whole cascade of stress hormones that are released. And this is one of the things in my MSc research that I wrote about. One of those hormones in that cascade is called corticotropin releasing hormone, or corticotropin releasing factor. And in fact, we have receptors for that through our whole gut, so from mouth to south, as we say. So all the way down that tract, we have these receptors. And this is why people get that very, you know, lots of people you speak to will say, you know, I can feel it in my gut, you know, the gut feeling you might describe, but also when you start to feel stressed, that feeling of butterflies in your stomach, which that might be a pleasant excitement, but then it might also be an unpleasant thing. And this is why stressful situations can have an absolute direct effect on the gut. And in fact, if people have been exposed to early life trauma, there's some really interesting research that that response is altered and maybe heightened. So it's not that people are imagining these gut symptoms, they're very real, and those early life stresses may have impacted the way that that's expressed in their gut. And there's, you know, there's other links with the mindfulness, because mindfulness and meditation are closely linked. You could argue that mindfulness is part of the meditation practice. And when we are in a calm state, we talk about like a coherent frequencies. And coherent frequencies support our cortical function. So that's the part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, which enables higher level thinking, creativity and innovation, greater insight. So there's a very real link here between, you know, decision making and our state of mind.
Yes.
And that all this is very much linked with, you may think, what's that got to do with nutrition? But of course, when we're in a very stressed state of mind, it's difficult to make good food choices. We've all experienced that. You've just been through a stressful episode, a hard day at work. What do you reach for? It's the chocolate, it's the salty crisps, maybe a gin and tonic.
You're just explaining me there.
Absolutely. So, you know, it may be that deep down, you know, those aren't the best food choices for you at that point, especially if you haven't eaten all day because you've been too busy, or you might have eaten in a really stressed state at lunchtime. And this is one of the things that I do through my mindful dinner events and mindful lunches I'm branching out into at the moment. I've got an event coming up in Harrogate in December. Is that I'm taking my dissertation research and I've created this interactive eating experience where we have some mindfulness and relaxation to start with. And I give people very simple tools, one of which is engaging your breath, for example. Because tuning into how you're feeling before you eat can really help you make better choices. And it can help you to actually digest your food better.
Oh, right. That's an interesting one, Vicky. I mean, I never think about, you know, we think I'm hungry, you know, it's mealtime, whether it's lunch or dinner or what have you. And, you know, you sit down, what are we going to eat? And you never think about the psychological process involved in there and how the good psychological process can actually help you digest your food.
It's really surprising, isn't it?
Yes,
it's really surprising. So there's two things going on there, and this is very much what I found as a result of my research, there's like physical and psychological processes going on there. So the psychological process is that you're, you know, looking at your food, you're engaging with your food, you're noticing what you're eating. There might be some feelings of, if you take a moment, and of course in the religious traditions, we might say a prayer of thanks, or even if it's not a religious tradition, it may be a spiritual tradition of being thankful, for grateful for the food on your plate. When you do that, you're engaging that coherence that I mentioned earlier, which puts us in a like a healthier brain state. But also what's happening there is you're taking down the stress response. And when you take down your stress response is also known as the sympathetic nervous system. You are engaging, when you're doing the opposite to that, you're engaging the parasympathetic nervous system. And the other name for that is the rest and digest system.
Right.
And it's called that for a really good reason, because when you are in a more of a rested state, your body can prioritize the resources, i.e. your blood flow, for example, to your stomach, because you're not running away from a threat. It's saying it's okay, it's safe, you can eat your food, and your body's primed for digestion. So as you look at the food you're going to eat, your body's already releasing the digestive hormone. So here's a direct link between what you're psychologically doing, and then your body is physiologically noticing those foods and starting to release this cascade of digestive hormones and enzymes. Right.
Okay, just thinking about that, Vicky. So when you're in a stress state, we all know that anybody who is stressed or anxious about anything is also quite distracted. And therefore, if you're distracted, those things that you've just described now, in that sort of preparing to sort of digest, you know, the food that you're eating, it's interrupted. So what kind of things that people, what would people notice then, if the body's not in that right place where it's able to rightly digest things?
Yeah, so a really good thing that you can do is just notice how you're breathing. Right. Notice what your body's doing. So the first step is just bringing awareness, which is essentially, that's at the core of all these spiritual mindful meditation practices, is awareness. Just notice what you're doing, first of all.
Yeah.
Because that in itself is actually very powerful. So you might notice that your breathing is, you know, breathing from your chest rather than your belly. If that's tricky to notice, just notice if you're breathing in quite a shallow way. Notice what your shoulders are doing. Are you a bit tight? Are your shoulders hunched? So if you consciously drop your shoulders and relax your body, take a deep breath. And you might, if you have time, ideally just make time to take 5 deep breaths. So a long inhale and a nice long, really slow exhale. And with that exhale, if you exhale as if you're just blowing a candle on a birthday cake, but not blowing it out. I really like that analogy.
Yes.
Gives you we're not going like that at this point. We're taking a breath in and then breathing out.
Yeah.
Like really slowly. And if you can manage to do that a few times, you'll be taking down that stress response. And that will probably take, 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Can you make time to do that?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because... And yes, I know we're talking about nutrition, but the reason why I wanted to talk to you was, as a society, we always seemingly compartmentalize things. So when we're talking about our well-being, you know, whether it's a business that's thinking about the well-being of the employees or whoever it may be, there always seems to be like a separation out. And so I find oftentimes they're only covering certain things. So when we're talking about even this, what you've just described, we also apply when we're talking about stress and anxiety in the world of money.
Interesting.
And one of the things that we find is that in the world of money, if you are in an emotional state, which is stress and anxiety is an emotional state, it's often fed by fear, the fear of something that you think might happen oftentimes or is about to happen. So it's either about to happen or you think it's going to happen. And often say to people, you know, where's the evidence of what you think is going to happen? And very often they can't find the evidence because it's the mind catastrophizing, because we're in that emotional state, that fear state, and therefore using our creativity in a negative way, we create a world that to us seems like it exists, but in actual fact, in reality, it doesn't exist. And so we talk about one of the aspects of reducing that stress so you can start to think more clearly using things like mindfulness, breathing exercises, as you have just described. And you're right, it doesn't take very long at all, but it's amazing the impact. I've done it myself.
Yeah. And I think one of the things perhaps is people have been put off a bit, like, maybe they've tried meditating once, or they've been told you've got to empty your mind and you must do it this way, which is, I've never managed to empty my mind. I've never done that successfully.
Maybe. Well, some might think that I've already emptied my mind, but...
But really, it's about, you know, you can just focus on the way you're breathing. If you're in a very, just to want to, a little caveat here, if people are in a very anxious state, if they've gone into the freeze state or something called disassociation, the breathing may not be an effective thing for them to be, or may not be advisable. But one of the things it's really good to do is practice these techniques, which is a super simple thing to do. So just 5 slow, deep breaths, tuning into your body, noticing what it's doing and consciously relaxing it. You know, is your lower back tight? That's something we tend to do, is sort of tense our backs, really noticing what our body's doing, because actually that's a feedback loop. So if your body's very tense, it's then communicating back to your body, this is a dangerous situation. If you make your body relax, that's communicating back to your nervous system, actually you're safe, you can relax. Sometimes people have mantras. It can be as simple as, I am safe, all is well, I can achieve what I need to in this moment. You know, I know that may sound corny to some people, but it can be incredibly simple. And what you're doing there is you're interrupting the thought pattern in your mind, and you're helping to rewire those neuronal connections in your brain. So this is neuroplasticity. So it's these things are very powerful tools that real hardcore science backs these up. You know, it's not woo-woo hippie stuff from the 70s.
Yeah. Well, there's a few things I'd like to pick up there, but I'll say this. You touched on it, and interestingly, just today, I've actually been to see a physio because my back is really, really stiff and tense, and it hasn't been three. And so the physio very kindly showed me some exercises I could do to really free up my back and strengthen those muscles. But as you were talking, I was just thinking to myself, I wonder if there's an element of me that's actually under stress at the moment that I'm just not aware of. Because that can be a case. We don't realize that we're under stress. I remember many years ago going to the doctor because I had a pain in my arm. And the first thing the doctor said was, oh, it's repetitive strain injury, because he'd asked me some questions about, do I use a keyboard at work? Do I work on a computer? Which I said, yes, I did. And he says, oh, it's repetitive strain injury. And I said to him, it can't be. And the reason being is because I teach ergonomics, which is all about posture and, you know, sitting at a desk and the correct posture and so on. And so he asked me a few more questions and suddenly said to me, it's stress. And I said, stress? I don't think I'm stressed at the moment. He goes, no, stress has an interesting way of manifesting itself without you realizing it. And I'm just thinking about what you've just said. You know, I was just thinking, I've just been to a physio to find out why is my back so inflexible and stiff. You know, I feel like an old man half the time, and you know, I'd say I'm only 60, so I'm still a whippersnapper. I'm just thinking about these connections that you're talking about. Now, there's that part, and I thought, well, yeah, it's, you know, I can see a link now. I can see what's going on. But the other thing is, also, we talk about nutrition, and I'm just thinking in terms of nutrition, you're right. When we're stressed, we tend to go for the junk food.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm feeling sort of out of sorts, do you know, a piece of chocolate is brilliant. And they say that actually chocolate does give you that sort of feel good factor. So hence why people can kind of overindulge. And there has been a few occasions when I've started with a bar of chocolate and suddenly realised there's nothing left.
Yeah.
I've eaten the whole bar in one go.
I mean, this is the thing about the unconsciousness of it, isn't it? And that's the thing about the mindful eating is being aware when you're of what you're eating, being present in that moment, because this is exactly what we do. Probably you've reached for the chocolate because... in the stress response that affects our blood glucose levels. So you're likely to get a spike and then a drop in your blood glucose levels. And when that level goes low, your body suddenly craves sugar. So of course we reach for a bar of chocolate. And if you're an executive is on the road, or you travel a lot as part of your work, and you go into the service station and you're hungry, what's right there in front of you? I mean, that drives me nuts. It's very, we live in an obesogenic environment. It's very difficult for people to make good choices at that point. So you might reach for that bar of chocolate, and that sugar hit does initially make you feel good. But in actual fact, what happens is then you end up on this blood sugar roller coaster. And if I've got some blogs on my website about this, and in actual fact, that can cloud our cognition in the longer term. It can lead to brain fog. Eating a lot of high sugar in your diet and processed foods contributes to inflammation, which is directly linked to brain health. If you've got inflammation in your gut, you're going to have inflammation everywhere systemically. Sorry, you were talking about your bar of chocolate eating in a stressful situation.
I'm trying not to think too much about my bar of chocolate.
But just to go back, actually, I would like to bring it back, if that's okay, to the mindful eating thing. So
yeah,
I very much come from a school of thought that I don't believe in completely denying yourself things that you love. But when you have that bar, when you have some chocolate, if you're really present in that moment and really enjoying it, and maybe you can manage to have two or three pieces, but really enjoy those two or three pieces. There's lots of research that shows if you eat that slowly in a very present way, and you're noticing the flavors and how it feels on your tongue, and then you're less likely to eat an excessive amount of it.
Right. I was going to say, we're sort of linking things like nutrition and coping with stress and anxiety and what changes we can make. I mean, what would you say to our listeners if in our conversation they says, oh, yeah, that's me, you know, I pull up at the service station, the first thing I do is, you know, it's there in front of me, I buy a bar of chocolate or I have a sugar hit. Yeah. You know, I go to the coffee and I'll have a shot of, I don't know, some liqueur or whatever in the coffee. What would you say to them if actually they're not helping themselves? But what they could do that would be more positive. You said the one where obviously eating something slowly and being mindful of what you're eating. But is there anything else that you could say to them that they might be able to use or exercise to help?
Yeah. So in terms of that, you know, you're on the road, or perhaps you're in a situation where you're having to buy what's in front of you. If you look for nuts, the unsalted nuts, there is actually healthier options if you look for them. So just be careful of things like cereal bars. So maybe try and read the labels. So you're looking for the high protein snacks, the healthier snacks. So something like nuts that haven't been sweetened or salted are ideal. You could have a look in the smoothies section to see if there's, you know, as an alternative to the coffee. And again, you do check what the sugar content of that is, because some smoothies can appear to be healthy, but actually they're still high in the sugar content. But if you combine some protein or a healthy fat, and I'm very much talking about healthy fats here rather than, you know, a packet of crisps that's high in fat, I wouldn't count that as a healthy fat. So your healthy fats are things like your nuts and your seeds and the fats you would get in oily fish. So if you can try and combine healthy fats with a sugary, with some squares of chocolate, then that's going to slow the release of that sugar into your bloodstream. And just to talk about the coffee for a moment as well. So of course, we do associate coffee with giving us more energy. The perception is it gives us more energy, it increases mental alertness. But that's very much, as it, everything in health and life and finances too, I'm sure, is about balance. So too much caffeine is not a good thing. Everybody's response to caffeine is different. So we might respond differently to it because of our genetic, because of our genes. So some people metabolize it really quickly. That means they can drink it and excrete it really quickly. Other people, it will affect them for much longer. So certainly if you're somebody who struggles with sleep and mental alertness is something that's important for you, lack of sleep is going to affect your mental alertness. It's going to increase brain fog. So consider not having caffeine after midday if you are sensitive to it. And I would also argue as well that if you are sort of, if it's making you anxious and jittery, if you notice you're increasingly anxious and jittery and you're still drinking the coffees, consider reaching for the decaf. But do look at, because people quite often ask me that, oh, can I have decaffeinated then? Do, but look for the water decaffeinated or the organic decaffeinated, because some coffees that are decaffeinated have been done so with a process of salt, like solvents, that I wouldn't recommend.
Right.
But there's lots of alternative. I mean, you know, the herbal teas used to be awful when they first came out. But maybe give your herbal teas another go. There's lots on the market now that are much better than they used to be.
I found with herbal teas, this was my experience, it was a case of the aroma heightened your expectation. Ooh, that smells really nice. And so you've got that expectation, only to your expectation to be absolutely dashed the moment you tasted it. And you're thinking, this tastes nothing like I just smelled. It's brilliant, is this, Vicky. And I just think that people listening, that, you know, to recognize the fact that there is so much about us as human beings that is intrinsically linked, that, you know, for example, the medical profession separating out the physical from the emotional and psychological, the mindfulness, separating the two, actually is not helping us. And oftentimes we'll reach for medication when in actual fact, it's a different practice that's not related to medication. Medication, I know, you know, in some cases, it's important, but we seem to reach for these things all too quickly considering other areas.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I understand how it's come about as a result of, you know, our brilliant free healthcare in our country. A tendency to go to the doctor and get a pill when something's wrong with you. I understand where that's come from, but I think you're absolutely right. We separate the mental from the physical at our peril. And it's something certainly in the Eastern traditions that's always been integrated. I mean, in terms of the stress response that we were talking about, it's the effects of those stress hormones are very real. And every cell in our body has multiple receptors for all of those hormones. So it is going to affect you. So it's really important the way to notice what's going on with your mind and tune into that. And, you know, practicing loving self-kindness here is really important. So I'm not talking about noticing that you're really stressed and then getting really annoyed with yourself because you're really stressed. this is really, really important in mindful eating, for example, because it may be, I've used it successfully with clients who have noticed they have an unhealthy relationship with food. And this is absolutely not about beating yourself up. It's about bringing, I've mentioned already, awareness. It's bringing awareness to it.
Yeah.
And if you don't make a great choice, you give yourself, you know, give yourself a break that day and send yourself some loving self-kindness, because, you know, we all possibly have some trauma with a capital or a little T in our background. And it's about healing those parts of ourselves, because that's very fundamental to our, you know, relationship with food is deeply emotional.
Yeah. Yeah, I know at the end of the day, when we look at the things that people turn to help make them feel better, feel good about themselves, you know, there's a lot of things that people become addicted to. And food is one of those.
Absolutely.
Just eating, you know, the comfort eating
side.
And we know if we get into that, we're actually compensated. We're using a coping mechanism to deal with something in our lives. Actually, eating is not the answer, but we need to know what it is. What is the root cause, and treat that appropriately. But at the same time, also think very carefully about the things that we do actually eat. Are they helping us? Are they giving us what the body needs to be resilient?
Yeah.
Or are we undermining the body's ability to be resilient?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is, I guess, our habits aligning with our goals. But I just want to make a link there. You mentioned about eating and, you know, people having addictions around food.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention that actually sugar addictions work on the same receptors on the brain as opioid addictions. So it's a very real addiction. It's something that's really hard to break, and it's well known that alcoholics may manage to become successfully cease drinking, which is an incredible achievement to be able to do that, but then sometimes they have a lingering issue with sugar, and it's for that reason. So it's a very real struggle. It's not just a kind of decision of willpower, and it's a hard thing for people to do, which is why I'm so frustrated sometimes by the environment that people are in and the advertising they're exposed to. But if you are able to make some of those choices, and you could maybe make some choices around, if you want a sweet sugary snack, there are lots of things out there, and there's some things on my website about this, and also on my mailing list, if people are signed up to that, I'll send up tips where people can make it's a sweet treat, but it's packed with nutritional goodness. So it's not empty calories. So you can make swaps. So you're not totally giving up sugar altogether, which is very difficult for many people to do, but you can make healthier swaps with those things to put yourself in a better position. And the more you fulfill those nutritional needs, actually the stronger you'll be at resisting those urges for the foods that deep down, you know, probably people often know this stuff, you know, that deep down the choices that you're making aren't great. But actually the more well nourished you are, the better position you are in to be able to make those better choices.
That's wonderful. Vicky, I'm conscious that we've run out of time, but I just want to, sort of draw people's attention to the work that you do. I like the whole thing of the meals and the mindfulness around that. Just about the sort of events where you come and do, I don't mean just talks, but you know, there's a lot about what you're talking about and more besides we've not covered. That's I know for many people would be of great interest, intrigue. How would they get hold of you if they want to talk to you about some of these things or utilize your services or invite you along to be a guest speaker? How would they get hold of you?
Well, if you go to my website, there's a contact form there. I have a Facebook page called Nutritional Therapy.
Your website is?
So it's core corenutritionaltherapy.com.
Right, so all one word, www.corenutritionaltherapy.com.
That's correct, yeah.
Brilliant.
And it's the same on Facebook.
Yeah, wonderful. Vicky, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I know we've had a long conversation prior to, what we've recorded now. And I just want to say thank you so much for your time. Wish you all the best in terms of the future. And I just hope that people listening to this will take note that all the things that we talk about when we're talking about the whole person, and it includes things like the nutritional side, as well as the mindfulness that crosses many aspects of our lives, whether it's from finances to relationship, to our social interactions, to our work, to our family life. It's all intrinsically linked. So, Vicky, thank you so much for your time and being a guest on Wisdom Chat.
I've loved it. You're very welcome, Phil. Thank you for having me.
Okay, you take care.
You too.